Okay, welcome to this workshop of practical discipline. Another word of caution to you is, you know, they talk about these survey sheets that they would like you to fill out. If you put down a topic suggestion on those, do not sign your name to it. So last year I was filling out the survey and I was like, you know what, I'd like to hear something on, you know, discipline for upper grades. And I wasn't too ashamed to put my name down for that. And what do you know, about middle of December, I get an email from John Smucker and says, hey, would you have practical discipline for upper grades? Wow, that wasn't quite what I was expecting. I wanted to hear somebody else talk about it. But it was really good for me to actually need to dig into it personally a little bit. So it's kind of been jiggling around in the back of my head for quite a long time now. And the reason I had put that down was I thought there was maybe some potential that I was going to need some practical pointers in discipline. Thankfully, that didn't really pan out. This next year, I think I might maybe need more than I did last year. I don't know. Hopefully not. But it's been good for me to look into this, think about it, and kind of try to come up with some practical things to guide our discipline. I feel like it gets a little trickier when you're dealing with upper graders because you are dealing with young adults. And they will probably take it a little differently than a first, second, third grader will. So first of all, here a question for you I'd like an answer. When should you discipline? Not really a trick question, but it can almost be a little bit. Any ideas? Like, when would you discipline?
Well, I think it's good to discipline when they do wrong, not when I'm embarrassed by what they do.
Exactly. Okay, good. When they have done wrong, go ahead.
Something my uncle has said is don't discipline. I think he was more talking about kids, but it kind of goes along with school kids too. He's like, don't discipline unless it's a direct order that was disobeyed.
Okay, yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Not that they, how do you say it? Kind of a vague disobedience. It's when, I think there should be a cut and dried, this was a disobedience. There was something committed that is known was wrong. Mm. I think that's, you don't want to discipline unless you actually have that to back you up. But the thing is, even the Bible speaks about sins worthy of many stripes and sins worthy of few stripes, sin unto death, a sin not unto death. And so to have a blanket statement of this is how we punish isn't necessarily going to cut it. I don't know, some of you were probably in Bing's class yesterday where he was talking about, you know, his first year he taught, like, you just punish with the rod. That's, the school board was like, rod. And it kind of sort of worked. But I don't think that's going to be necessarily your best approach. Because there are things that are more serious than others. And so that's why we run into this question of, well, how do I? What do I? When do I? Because we have these different situations that come up and we're not sure how to go about it. Curious how many of you have taught for more than 3 years? Okay, so not too many of you. Okay. And I'm assuming everybody's teaching upper grades, 5, 6 on up, something like that. I have taught 3 years. All of them would have been considered upper grades probably, going into my fourth year here, so I don't feel like I have just a lot of experience to share with you. But hopefully you have some experience to share with me as well. So kind of what I'd like to do is I have some general stuff that I'd like to share with you here at the beginning, and then on your handout you'll see I have 4 different things I'd like to go through. The goals for discipline, biblical reasons for discipline, before you discipline, and some practical discipline things, and then I have some things that are not on your handout, and I have some discipline situations and then some discipline questions. And that's the last 2 points there is where I'd like a lot of input from you then. So in preparation for this workshop, I had sent out questionnaires to probably about between 30 and 40 people. Questions like, should you spank in upper grades? What are principles that need to be in place for disciplining upper grades? How much humiliation should be involved? Things like that. And I got some feedback. There was a lot of people who did not respond, but I got enough to get a pretty good idea of what people were feeling. And I would say that most of the feedback was that a lot of it has to do with me as a teacher. And that's a little bit scary in some ways, because that puts a lot of reflection on me if my classroom is not working well. But I think there's a fair amount of truth to that. Now, that's not going to be 100% true across the board. You know, there are situations, there are things that are going to come up that you have no control of. And we all know about that. But I think if we as teachers are who we need to be, then we have a basis to go off of to expect our students to be who they need to be. For example, I know of a teacher who sometimes did not show up for school until sometimes after some of the students showed up. He tended to work very late, midnight and beyond, and then come to school very late, 8:45 and beyond. It didn't go so well. There were other things that factored in, but that was just kind of one thing. If you're not disciplined enough to be there in good time and be ready for the day, don't expect your students to be there and ready for the day. Okay? When I struggle with authority in my life, like a school board or ministry, maybe there's a minister I just don't really get along with. If I struggle with that, how are you going to expect your students to not struggle with your authority? When I struggle with being confident in the abilities and gifts God has given me, how can I expect my students to be confident in the gifts that God has given them? We might get away with, you know, some of this stuff if you're teaching younger grades to maybe a somewhat of a lesser degree, but you will not get away with it in upper grades because they have a little bit more perception than what you might actually give to them. We were all very perceptive students when we were in upper grades, you know, but remember that your students are just as perceptive as you were. Back to that thing of from the questionnaire, it was definitely, most of the feedback I got was that the teacher must be respectful, the teacher must be trustworthy, teacher must be consistent, teacher must, teacher must, teacher must. So I think we really need to keep that in mind. Along with the thing of consistency, somebody told me just last Sunday that what really screwed it up for them 1 year when he was in the upper grades was when the teacher himself did something that he had told them never ever to do. Well, and then they were like, well, hey, you're not supposed to do that. And rather than actually being, oops, my bad, you know, I shouldn't have done that, the teacher got defensive. Well, it just ruined the rest of the year for him because suddenly he was no longer respectable. That kind of leads me to another point here. I think you have to be able to apologize to your students. I had to do that multiple times last year. It's not very fun. But it does clear the air. And it does build a basis for respect. And I believe when I know how it is when I see an authority figure in my life apologize for something that he or she has done and how that makes it feel. So it's going to be the exact same thing when I do it to my students. You need to be able to apologize. I remember one situation last year where we were having, we were discussing Anabaptist history, and one of my brighter students answered a question in a very vague way. And it was way too vague for what I was looking for. I said, well, we got to get more specific than that. And right away, I saw something go across his face that said, I just answered that. Good. Well, I didn't think he had. And we kept going, and we discussed a little further and finally came up with the answer that I was looking for. And I saw him go, oops. So what am I supposed to do? And it bugged me, and it was at the end of the day, and the students went home. And so I sent him a text. I said, hey, I'm sorry. I was not trying to take anybody off. I worded it wrong. Yeah, I know you were trying, and I'm sorry. And it cleared the air. It really did. And I was just afraid that if I wouldn't say anything to him, that it would be there for a while. Mm-hmm. So just take that. A lot of you are familiar with Aaron Durston, I think, right? Or know of him, or heard of him. This is a quote from him. This is in response to the questionnaire that I sent out. In nearly all the classrooms I've been involved in that have had discipline problems, the students did not believe that their teacher really cared about what was best for them and did not trust that he was working in their best interest. The teacher did not trust his students either. Often the teacher in question was a bad sport in games and favored some students above others. I would have had a hard time responding well to his discipline as well. So before you start meting out punishment, make sure you know who's to blame first. Okay, goals for discipline. First one I have here is seeking to assist in the development of a godly person who will walk in God's ways. Seeking to assist in the development of a godly person who will walk in God's ways. Now that's kind of a big, long wordy thing there, but I think this is fairly foundational. I like to think of it as this should be a way of thinking for you. So think of your Christian life. When you start out in your Christian life, this maybe especially if you became a Christian when you were a little older, it doesn't come naturally for you. Probably still doesn't. Actually, I know it doesn't. But in some ways, it's maybe easier than it was. Because it has become your way of life. It's become your way of thinking. And that way of thinking influences your everyday decisions. Okay? So what I'm trying to say is, go ahead and do the same thing with this. Make this sort of your frame of mind while teaching school. I am here to develop godly people. And after a while, it will become a way of thinking. And it will temper the decisions that you have to make. This is going to affect everything from lunch talk to recess time. And it's not that it all has to be spiritual. That's not at all what I'm trying to say. As a matter of fact, if it is all spiritual, you will probably end up turning students away. But it's going to cut out a lot of foolishness. You know, if you just don't allow ridiculous talk at lunchtime, it's going to take care of some of this stuff. If you don't allow sixth graders to act like six-year-olds on the playground, you cut out a lot of stuff. But remember that if you expect that from them, your whole life, not just your school life, needs to be that way too. Especially when, so is the second year I taught, some of my students were in the youth group with me. You get it. Second one I have here. Another goal for discipline is restoration of the person in the wrong. The goal is to take care of a problem, not show everyone how big the problem was, how terrible the offense was, how stupid the offender was, etc. That's not your goal is to get a restoration of the wrongdoer, whether that be between you and him, between him and another person, between him and God, whatever. That's going to be a goal in discipline. It's to take care of the problem. Okay. We all know how it feels to have a problem in our lives exposed and dealt with. or I'm assuming we do. The feeling of joy and cleanliness afterward is amazing. It just is. Whew, got that taken care of. That's what we're trying to achieve in our students, okay? Because they will mess up, but we want them to feel that, whew, it's cleaned up, it's cleared. Sometimes we allow things like personal vindication to take the place of this, like Brother Ron brought up, when I have been embarrassed by one of my students. Discipline quickly loses its effectiveness when that happens. There's a difference between being humbled and being humiliated, okay? And very, very strongly came out, and I would definitely back this opinion up in the questionnaires that I got back. Humiliation has no place in the classroom. Okay? Humiliation is not a way to punish. There's going to be some humbling that comes along with discipline, but humiliation is not the discipline. Okay? So what if God wanted you to feel humiliated every time you did something wrong? Our lives would be miserable. There's a certain amount of humiliation that goes along with being punished, but I think a student can quickly tell what the goal of the punishment was. Okay, and that kind of goes along with the third one I have here. No loss of self-worth for the offender. Now that might be, this can get a little tricky, I would say. Because it is pretty hard to feel a lot of self-worth when you're in trouble. Or it should be that way anyway. When you realize that, oh man, I messed up. Oh, I didn't do this right. Whatever. It's a little hard to feel self-worth. But I think we as teachers can help with that a little bit, depending on how we respond to this. Obviously, we want the student to realize that he's made a mistake, but we don't want them to feel worthless for it. A person who has his self-worth removed by an authority figure has a hard time getting anywhere in life on his own. And I've seen this firsthand. I had a ninth grade student that I don't really have actual proof that home life is abusive, but I've heard that it is. And it's verbal abuse. And the poor guy can hardly get anywhere, especially when the pressure is on. Pressure comes on, and he freezes up. I literally saw him pull out a calculator to figure out 10 minus 5 in ninth grade. Okay, because the pressure was on. He's got to get this figured out. And I feel like his self-worth has been trodden on and removed. And that's not what we're after. If you make a person feel worthless, you've just severed your relationship with that person. It will take much longer to restore the relationship than you ever guess. If you make your student feel worthless, he will suddenly become worthless. Make someone feel dumb and they will remember that for years. Make someone feel loved and cared for, and they won't remember what specifically made them feel that way, but they will remember it for years. Okay? And the fourth one I have here for goals is to help the offender see his wrongdoing and assist him in his desire to clear himself. Now, that last part of that, assist him in his desire to clear himself, the students can have a little bit of a hard time with that one. They don't necessarily always feel that desire to clear themselves. They just want to cover it all over and nobody knows about this and we're done. But I think we have a very good opportunity to help them in life, realizing that sometimes there is some clarity that needs to go on. Upper grade students are actually young adults. They are beginning to recognize what people around them think of them. They realize the implications of wrongdoing, and worse yet, of being found out. If we can help them learn what it takes to clear themselves and the freedom and respect that comes from being responsible for our own actions, we can make a huge impact on them for the rest of their lives. And again, they're going to have to see that in you. Okay, biblical reasons for discipline. First one here, because you love the child. That comes from Proverbs 13, verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Now, if you're like me, some students are easy to love and others aren't. It doesn't necessarily even depend on the brightness of the student always. I had a student that was probably one of the lowest academically speaking in my room last year. He was about the easiest to love. He just had an awesome attitude most of the time. And he could have about got away with anything, you know? There was others that just kind of take a little bit of real love, I guess. Okay? But if you don't love your students, you won't get far with them. And you're going to have to love all of them. I've heard of students going home, and we would have heard this yesterday about as soon as you pick them up from school, I forget which class that was in, and saying that the teacher doesn't like such and such a student. Ooh, ouch. Okay? They are very perceptive of that. Okay? Discipline without love is like driving a car without oil. The results are going to show sooner rather than later. Okay? The second one I have here is because there is hope when a child is young. That comes from Proverbs 19, verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. I don't have a lot to say about that other than that now, you know, when they are in your classroom, you have a very good opportunity to help shape lives, which you all know that. But I would also take from this verse that you should deal with things sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. Because if you let things go, say something happens and you do nothing with it for a couple days, it's a lot harder to actually make the connection, mm-hmm. possibly. I don't know. I hope that makes sense to you. Not quite sure how to say it. The third one I have is to help bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That comes from Ephesians 6, verse 4. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And we kind of went over that in our goal there. Number three, before you discipline. The first one I have here. What I kind of have in mind for these is before you as a teacher can discipline, some of these things are going to need to be in place to some degree. First of all, do you trust your students? No, right? You would never trust your students. I mean, every time you do, why they turn around and do something you don't want them to? That's not really what I'm talking about. They have to sense that you actually trust them and that you have their best in mind. And trust begets trust. I remember a man talking to our family one time. We met him on the job. He was a professing Christian man. And he said later, one of the first things that he noticed about it, my dad and brother and I were all installing cabinets on this job. He said one of the first things he noticed was the respect that the boys had for the dad and the respect that the dad had for the boys. And I was like, respect for the boys, okay, you know, like, right, you know. Looking back, I can see it a lot more now. But trust begets trust, okay? And so don't wait for your students to trust you for you to trust your students. It's going to have to be the other way around, okay? And that's going to make it a little bit vulnerable for you. It's going to probably be a little scary to just trust them with something that you're not quite sure how it's all going to go. Maybe it's they have a privilege of studying somewhere else for an hour. Can you trust them with that? The first time, if you go ahead and trust them with that, you have just gone ahead and said, I trust you to take care of this and to do this right. But they will also know that they can break that trust now. But if everything goes well, you have just created, you went ahead and trusted first, and now they can trust you to keep your end of the deal as well. Okay? It's not just a one-time instance. It's something you're going to have to work with. But you, as the school teacher, are going to have to make the first step and do the trusting before your students are going to take the second step and trust you. Okay? And that's maybe sort of an abstract point. It's not really like going to be a cut and dry, okay, I'm trusting these students right now. again, it's going to become sort of a way of thinking, a way of life, maybe. The second one, are you annoyed at the student or students? Something goes wrong. What an idiot. Don't use that word in your classroom, by the way. Only in your head. One of my co-teachers, this is maybe just a little bit of a bunny trail, he gave me a mug at the end of last year. It said, it has a little chicken on it there, and he said, I may look calm on the outside, but inside I've pecked you 3 times. sometimes it really feels that way. If you're pecking someone inside, maybe just wait 5 minutes, okay? Let things cool down a little bit. The third one, make sure you have communicated clearly what is expected. This was something I got from the questionnaire. Make sure your students understand what you were expecting from them. Because if they don't, you're going to be cracking down on them for things that they weren't really sure if they were or weren't supposed to do. Does that make sense? So make sure that you've communicated clearly what you're expecting from them. And that can range everywhere from assignments to recess to whatever. Okay? The fourth one I have here, and this is not one you're going to get overnight. Make sure you understand the school culture. Okay? That is not something you're going to get in 1 year, not in 2 years, barely in 3 years. Okay? So, you know, all the first-year teachers, they hear this thing about school culture, and they don't really understand what that means. That's absolutely nothing against you, because I was there. I'm still there sometimes. But school cultures are different. Mm-hmm. Very, very drastically different. And so sometimes what can be labeled as disrespect in one culture, the next culture says, what are you talking about? I found this out in marriage. So my family was fairly, dad said it, you did it, no questions asked, right? If dad said, this is the route we're going on the trip, you shut up and sat in the seat and went on that route on the trip, right? Okay, I admire that, okay? Well, my wife's family, dad says, I think I'd like to go on this route for this trip. Dad, why? That's so curvy, it's awful, blah, blah. Are they disrespecting him? In my mind, they almost were, until I learned that this is the way they operate. This is not disrespectful. They just have a different approach. They have a different, I don't know how to say it really. That's not labeled as disrespect. Okay? I would say I had a good home life. I would say my wife had a good home life. But in my book, you don't do that, right? Okay, I've changed some now, but so, and the exact same thing can happen in school culture, where maybe especially in your first year, you're going to be like, "Oh, you can't do that," and you maybe mete out some sort of a punishment for it, and then the students and the parents and the school board and some of the other people are like, "Oh, okay," you know, don't really say anything, and. Again, did you follow me? Mm-hmm. Because it is actually pretty real. And it's probably not, I do not feel like I totally understand it. Even some of our culture yet, at home there. Because I've only been there for 8 years. But I'm starting to understand it a little bit more than I did. Okay. Let's go to the next one here before we run out of time. Give the benefit of the doubt to the student. Okay, now this is going to be a little bit of a tough one sometimes, because sometimes you have evidence that something was wrong. Make sure you actually have evidence before you punish. If something's not quite lining up, if you're also not sure about something, okay, you've heard that there's this problem, you address it, and the student's like, I don't know anything about this. Okay, maybe before you get too quick to just cut and dry, this is the problem, give the benefit of the doubt. If it is actually a problem, it will come up again. Mm-hmm. Okay? We had that a couple times last year where we were like, okay, should we do something or shouldn't we? But it wasn't just clear, cut and dried. And we decided, you know what? If it is actually a problem, it will be there again. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, you know, and obviously you don't want to beat around the bush and try to muddy everything up so you don't really know whose problem it is anymore, so you don't have to punish anybody. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is these situations where you're like, I didn't see it. I'm not quite sure. Okay? Number four here, practical discipline. So what I mean by this is some practical things that when you are disciplining that you should maybe have in place. Do not mince words. Okay? We all hate it when someone comes to us and it's just this big old vague, work all the way around the bush, get back to where we started, and we're still not quite sure what we did wrong. Mm-hmm. All right? Your students don't like that either. Okay? Now, you don't want to make them feel worthless. You don't want to, you know, ream them out. That's not what we're after. But they need to know what they did wrong. We had a situation last year where we decided that a couple boys needed to be addressed. Not punished, just addressed. And the school board chairman told me, he said, make sure they know that they have sinned. Because this is not just, oh, we were kind of bad. Mm-hmm. Make sure they know that this is wrong, okay? And this is unacceptable. So I think they appreciated that. Okay? The second one I have here, don't make the punishment worse than the offense. Now, this can be very, very tempting because sometimes we want to make a bit of an example of someone, okay? Resist that temptation. If somebody, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head here. You know, if somebody's late into the classroom by a minute, don't make them stay in for 5 minutes at recess time, okay? That's not that big of a deal. Try to match the punishment to the offense as much as you can. I've already heard of people that they had this big problem in their head, and they're like, you know, we kind of need to deal with this. And to me, it was like, well, that's not that big of a deal. Sometimes when we're in the middle of it, this whole thing just starts building, and we start getting this whole big problem built up based on one little action. Mm-hmm. And well, this means this and this and this, and also we have this big old bulky problem that we've got to do something with. And so, I would say talk to your co-teachers before you just make any too big of moves. Talk to your co-teachers, talk to your school board, some things like that. And the problem is when you end up with a big punishment like that, the students end up backing each other up more often than not because they're also like, whoa, back off. And their way of saying that is, hey, yeah, let's do this, okay? Use punishments that make sense, okay? It's great to have creative punishments. And you need that. Jonah, you said something last night about having lots of creative punishments. This is not to diss that at all, okay? I would be very interested in hearing what some of yours are. But don't do ones that are just like, that was weird, okay? Because you will get a pushback from the students. The students will start backing up the offender then. You're making them do that? Like, come on. Like, that doesn't make any sense, okay? So just be careful about that. Here's one that I got from a upper grade teacher, a lady that I feel is a very, very, very good upper grade teacher. Teaches in one of the Whistler schools back in Indiana. I think it's a pretty big school. She said, instead of using the words you to start a sentence, use the word I. Okay, now here's an example of that. Instead of saying you were disrespectful when you did that, She said, you should say, I felt disrespected when you did that. Okay, it takes the accusation off of the person. Okay, it kind of changes the tone a little bit. And she said that has helped quite a bit. Now, that's just a random thing. But maybe it's something that we could work on. Instead of saying, hey, you had a problem with this, say, hey, I noticed that this is going on. I think we should do something. Put some of the responsibility on yourself. Okay? All right, now, we've got a couple minutes here. I would like to hear from you. I have some discipline situations here. Most of them are ones from my experience. Okay? And I'd like to hear from you. What should we do in this situation? So a student is annoyed at how the ball game is going because his team is losing. He's from one of the younger rooms. I'm teaching in the upper room. I am running around the bases, and I shout some encouragement to my team, who happens to be winning. Yeah, we can do this, we can do this, right? As I run past the student, he growls, shut up. Okay. I stopped at third base, and I said, what did you say? Shut up. Ooh, okay. What would you do? This is not one of my students, okay?
You can go sit in your desk and think about it, too.
But Then, do you send their teacher in, too? How do you do that? It's not your student. That's my question on something like that.
Yeah. Johnny, you have something.
You have not given us anywhere near enough information. This would be a situation where we would need to know the student.
Mm-hmm.
And I would want to know your relationship with your kid teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your school culture. In some school cultures, there's a teacher who is responsible for all the students on the playground. If that's the case, then it's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your day, if it's not, then it's not your problem.
Mm-hmm.
If it is that you take care of your students and your co-teacher takes care of their students, it's a situation where you might glance at the co-teacher if they didn't see the problem. Then it's your call whether you make an issue out of it or not.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of situations like that, when I know it's the heat of the moment, I understand the student's emotions, rather than dragging the problem out, I might just ask them, do you really mean that? Do you want me to quit playing hard?
Mm-hmm.
Would you feel like you really won if our team didn't try hard?
Yeah.
And they start kind of,
yeah.
And you took a situation, and they realized that, yeah, you like them, you care about them, and you took a problem that could have been this big discipline thing, and instead you established a relationship and student doc, which is one of something you were talking about
here. Good.
Anyway.
Good.
Another approach would be, here again, we don't have too many details, but depending on the situation, it could be all right to take a light approach to it, too. Like, I'm not going to stop cheering for my team. You're going to have to start cheering for your own team.
There you go.
Just take it a light approach, and
that
can maybe solve the problem as well.
Yeah. Good. More thoughts? Maybe we should move on to another one, because we're getting very much out of time here. Let's see here. An 8th grade boy says he hates school, has poor attitudes in general, and is influencing some of his peers to join him in his negative ways. The parents have been informed, and they say they are working on it, but you have seen little to no improvement. Things are building to a head, and one day enough is enough. What are you going to do?
So, this is something I haven't really done, but I had a student that did that exact thing, and I asked my grandpa, who actually taught school for a couple of years, and he was like, when I was teaching, he said, I had a girl that did this every single day in school, and it was very annoying. Finally, he said, every time you complain, the whole class has to do double the assignment. And that cut, like, in about 3 days, it stopped because her classmates got on her tail like nothing else. They were so mad at her. And it worked.
Good.
That's the type of creative punishment.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned, and this is where I come up with creative punishments. You mentioned the punishment should mirror the crime.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my students that that's what's going to happen at the beginning of every school term. So that when a student is trying to influence other people, well, then the punishment can influence other people too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it can work both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes students connect the dots very quickly, especially the upper grade students. Yeah, if they're being a bad sport and so they have to sit on the sidelines, they figure that out real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
One thing I really struggle with is the balance between giving some time to think about it but not waiting so long that it blows up in your mind. And like, that is such a hard one to work through, because if you do it in the moment, a lot of times you regret it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait too long...
Yeah, you also regret it.
Yeah.
And that might depend a little bit on the offense. You know, so last year we had one that simmered for a few days before we actually made a move. And that was on a bit of a click situation where there was some bad things going on. Whereas somebody growling "shut up" as I ran past, I'm not going to sit there and simmer on that for a few days. You know what I mean? But, Kyle.
I wonder, this guy doesn't even hear me right now, so it's not thought through, but I wonder if the little issues should be dealt with right away. If it's a big issue, everyone knows this guy just lied to you, or he just called you out, or there's some huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that you can give a couple of days, let everyone cool down, let yourself cool down, and then deal with. Because everyone knows it's a problem.
Yeah.
But if it's a little problem, maybe not everyone knows it's a problem. Those might be one of the ones to jump on.
Good. I think that's wise.
Yeah.
Here's another situation. In this one, I get a little bit vulnerable because I say what I did. An 8th grade boy gets caught by a 10th grade boy in an animated game of single base. The 8th grade boy makes two fists and starts punching at the 10th grader. I call him out and tell him to go into his desk. I wait 2 minutes and then I go in and talk to him. I tell him such behavior is unacceptable. He is teary and repentant. Later, I hear from an older brother that he was mad at me because he was only punching in fun. Did I handle this correctly? I don't know. Later, I was like,
"Ooh." You want them to all start punching each other?
Punching in fun. That was kind of where I came from too. It's like this is unacceptable whether it's in fun or not. I don't know.
Was the in fun to his older brother just to cover up for his actions? I
guess? It was to his mother that said this, and then his brother communicated that to me. I did hear his mother ask him if he was trying to show off, and he couldn't really deny. So, I don't know. In some ways, I feel like he was in the wrong either way. But it did kind of make me question, like, ooh, maybe I should have just let it go. But at the same time, that's still unacceptable. You know.
I would say that your method of sending him in, waiting a few minutes, and going in yourself is something. I've had a number of upper grade students who had anger problems. And if I tried to address it immediately on the playground, all it ended up was a big yelling match.
Yeah, okay.
And no one benefited from that.
Yeah.
I learned to do that very thing. And I was blessed. Well, I mean, the one student would cuss on the playground. It didn't get that bad. I sent him inside. 2 minutes later, I'd walk in there and we take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would say is that I have a policy that we never end a recess like that. The other students know that.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep playing. The guy who's in trouble comes back out with me. We play at least one more minute. Everybody's happy.
And then,
that you mentioned clearing the air. It does so much for the next study period if the air is clear when you come into recess. And that's
what's
been. Everybody knows that, teacher and student are. Returns again.
Are restored. Good.
There's no tension.
Yeah.
So if they keep the tension going, they can keep playing?
If they keep the tension going, to mirror the crime.
Yeah.
The punishment would intensify as well.
They're usually not having fun if their classmate would just sent in.
Yeah.
Right.
One of my family had to go get a spanking, and you're sitting there, and it hurts too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the students want the bad guys to behave.
Exactly.
They do.
They never enjoy the bad years, and no matter how big the story is,
yeah.
They like to say,
yeah.
They don't enjoy those
no.
years.
And even the bad ones want, they want you to be in charge. They want, I've had students who would literally disobey until I would punish them. And the reason was that they were insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, at home, that would never happen. They could disobey, and nobody would do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally realized that, the one student would, about every 2 months, he would disobey. And if I didn't punish him the first time he did it, it would just keep getting worse until I would finally punish him. And finally, I would just, about every 2.5 months, this guy starts acting up. By the way, I punish him, and we're good to go for another 2.5 months.
Great. Okay, we need to wrap this up. We're already a little bit over time. I have a couple questions I'd like to throw at you. I do not have answers for these. Well, I have some opinions on some of them, but I don't necessarily have answers on all of them. Something just for you to ruminate on, I guess. Should you spank an upper grader? Okay. Should the whole class suffer for one person's misdemeanor? When should I get the school board involved? Should there be written in stone punishments for every problem that we can imagine could possibly come up? One thing I will say about that one is the more hard and fast rules you make, the more exceptions you will have to make. Okay? There's my opinion on that one. Should there be exceptions for punishments? Should I ask my students what they think would be an appropriate punishment? And should I use something purposely humiliating as a punishment? And we already kind of covered that a little bit. And again, it's going... All these questions are going to depend on the situation, okay? You're not going to make a hard and fast yes, no on these questions. But I would just encourage you, develop that mindset of developing godly people, and that will go a long ways in your practical discipline methods. Trust me, you are going to mess up, okay? You are. But when just like we heard this morning, a righteous man falls 7 times and he gets up every time. Okay, be the same person, and God bless you in your school year.